Hello, everybody. This is Josh Price, and you are listening to the Mark Price for Three podcast. Each episode, my dad will be talking NBA basketball, sharing some coaching and instruction, and of course, talking about his faith. Without further delay, here's my dad, Mark Price.
Welcome back to the Mark Price for Three podcast, episode 55 today. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Aaron. How are you?
I am good. It's a Monday. We've had our technical issues as always, but we fight through it. We fought through it. We just battled.
That's right. We cannot be stopped.
It's just battle. That's all. No excuses. No excuses on a Monday. We have a lot to get to today. The Cavs are 3-4. Had to update my show notes because they went out and beat the Warriors last night, which was a pretty awesome game. It was a fun game to watch. Did you get a chance to watch the game last night?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to see the game last night. I was kind of following it, a game cast on my phone a little bit. But, you know, from what it sounded like, the Cavs are kind of back, more back to what they were last year, playing together, got their starters back. So that's a huge sign. Mitchell, once again, had a big game for him. Yeah. He's kind of the ringleader right now for sure. But it was nice to see Darius Garland back in the mix. Had a nice game. First half still seemed to be finding his footing a little bit, but it looks like second half he really was able to pick it up, ended up with 24 points. So got over 50-something points from the guards. That's always a good sign for the Cavs.
And they got a lot of boards out of the two bigs. So that's also a great sign for the Cavs. Really, and Golden State went small for a bit, which, you know, they typically do, and that was very successful for them. But I think that was the Cavs' counter move, was that they went big, and, you know, they just couldn't really get over the size of Jared Allen and Mobley. So it was good to see. It's always good to see the Warriors lose in Cleveland.
Yeah, it is. It is. Steph Curry brings the excitement to the game, as always. He's a fun player to watch. It's always a challenge to guard, but to your point, I'm glad that the Cavs go to their strengths with the bigs. A lot of times when the Warriors go small, teams try to match up with them and go small. I'm glad the Cavs didn't do that and went to their strengths, and it paid off for them last night.
The funny thing is, I don't think, and I think if you go back in the archives of our podcast, I don't think any of us thought that Tristan Thompson would have much of a role this year besides maybe a vocal role, and he's playing minutes. And honestly, he's playing really hard. I have to give a shout out to Tristan because he's playing really hard in those minutes that he's played, and he's providing leadership when he's in there. And so that might end up being a really important signing for the Cavs, at least so far. It's very early, but so far, that might be end up being a pretty important signing for the Cavs.
Well, I think so. I think he's a veteran guy. You saw particularly when Jared Allen was out for those games, Tristan was able to come in and give him some solid minutes. And he's just the kind of player, he's at that stage in his career that there's going to be some games he probably doesn't play at all. And there's going to be other games where things aren't going so good and we need maybe a guy to come in there and kind of settle us down a little bit. And I think he's maybe that guy for the Cavs. Hopefully, as the season progresses, we'll kind of see how that role develops over the course of the season in a more regular role, maybe. Yeah. But right now, he's doing what they brought him in to do. He's ready to go when called upon, and that's kind of the role they signed him for.
It's funny because the interview that they did at halftime was with Tristan Thompson. There's all those players on that team, and the one guy that they grabbed on the way to the locker room was Tristan Thompson. And I think that speaks of volumes about his leadership, where he's at, and, you know, what he knows about where they are as a team. And so, yeah, just a lot of respect for him last night. What are your thoughts overall? So they're 3-4, didn't really come out of the gate like they wanted to. A lot of injuries. You all experienced injuries. Where do you think they are? I mean, again, we're 3-4, so let's not get crazy. I still don't understand the in-season tournament thing. I just can't even explain. I don't understand it. And I should probably read more about it. But lost the first game of the in-season tournament. I don't know if last night's game counted in the in-season tournament. I don't know. They didn't have a special floor, so I don't know how it works. Whatever. But
no, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how it works either. And I don't know that the Cavs, now that they lost, if they're out of the tournament or not. But yeah, so the Cavs fans may not get to see their in-season tournament court.
Right.
I don't know how that works, but I know last night's game wasn't part of it.
Yeah.
So how they're working that, I'm really not sure. But I thought an interesting, I believe it was Halliburton for Indiana, came out and made a statement. If you really want to make this in-season tournament meaningful, the team that wins it gets an automatic playoff berth. You know, and I thought, you know what, that's a pretty good idea.
Great idea.
Obviously, it raises the stakes, right, particularly say for a team that maybe they're not a playoff team over the course of 82 games. If they can get hot early in the season and win the in-season tournament and get an automatic bid, so to speak, it almost sounds like college, get an automatic bid.
Right.
But love you it. Know, talk about maybe adding some excitement to, hey, these guys really want to win this thing. There's something meaningful at the end of it. Right now, I don't think that there is. And so, you know, I think everybody's trying to, oh, it's an in-season tournament, but if we win, great. If we don't, great. I mean, it's kind of that mindset. It doesn't move the needle. It might move the needle for fans just to kind of, hey, we won the in-season tournament deal. Yeah. But for the players right now, as it's set up, I'm not sure it moves the needle too much.
Great commercial, by the way. They did a great commercial, but it doesn't explain what it is. And I'm still confused as an old school. And again, that's just me not studying it enough, maybe. I don't know, but I still don't understand it. And I don't, therefore, maybe I don't really care. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on your podcast, but seriously, I don't understand it, so I don't care. I'd rather just watch guys go out and play every night and play hard and win games. It's just like the uniforms and the courts and I get it. I understand it is a marketing machine, but I'm very old school and will stand in my front yard and yell at clouds because I still believe just go out and win and play hard and play tough. And that's all I think everybody's asking for. The rest of this stuff, I just don't care. I really don't. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Well, you're probably not alone in that, for sure. And I mean, if you're going to make special courts for something, at least make them look good.
Oh gosh, they are really hard to look at.
Some of those courts were just loud, right?
Very loud.
Just loud. And I mean, I'm thinking, man, that goes guys I'm just running around in a sea of blue or sea of red or whatever it might be. Interesting thought process for sure.
And I'm colorblind, so finding a 3-point line on that kind of court would be very difficult for me. You know, finding that transition. Anyway, all right, let's move on. We got a lot to cover today. You know, we finally have a trade in the NBA. James Harden is now a Clipper. Just a quick thought. What are your thoughts on the Clippers and the trade and Harden and all that?
Well, my first thought is Philadelphia is probably feeling pretty good. Yeah,
right. He's, your buddy Nick Nurse, right?
Yeah, that he's somebody else's issue right now. Right. So right. At some point, that it just got to be just one thing after another, I think. It's just – and you see Philadelphia playing pretty good basketball right now without him. So we'll see where that goes over the course of the season. But it's almost like a weight's been lifted from the Sixers, and they're just going out and playing ball now and playing pretty well. And now the Clippers got to figure out what to do with him. I mean, it's just on paper, I don't see all that. I mean, you got Harden and Westbrook and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And I mean, talk about not having enough balls,
right?
You know, on the court. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. Now, I mean, obviously everybody's like, well, Ty Lue, if anybody can do it, Ty Lue can. Well, I think he's probably got his work cut out for him a little bit here because, I mean, you got some unbelievable egos that you're dealing with there. And so, yeah, I mean, more power to them. They're trying to go for something. We'll see if it works. Only time will tell.
And I don't think Harden's the player that he used to be. I mean, for a while, he dominated the league. Obviously, I think he won multiple MVPs or at least one because he was just unstoppable. I mean, just insane at times. And then just things got weird. You know, things got weird. And I don't think he's the player that he used to be. I'm not sure he's taking care of himself. Anyway, I'm not here to judge. I don't know. I don't see the fit. You got four guards. You know what I mean? All very, as you said, ball dominant guards. I don't know. I don't see it. So good luck to the Clippers.
Yeah. And I think you look back at Harden's career and I think those years where he kind of you know, was blowing it up, and he was really the only star player on that team. Mm-hmm. You know, you look back on Houston Rockets team and different things. I mean, it was like he had the freedom. Basically, he had the ball every time down the floor and to do whatever he wanted to do. And, you know, I think when you get with these three-headed monster teams or four-headed, now you're having to deal with spreading the wealth around a little bit. I mean, in Philly, you had one of the best players in the league. You know, the MVP was a big man. And so the floor wasn't opened up for Harden to do the kind of stuff he likes to do, because you got the best player, one of the best players in the league in the low post, and you got to get him the ball. Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is. And so, you know, that probably wasn't a great fit, you know, and looking back on it. But yeah, I don't know if this is going to be a good fit or not for him. So we'll see. Like you said, he's not a spring chicken anymore. Mm-hmm. He's older. The minutes that he used to play and all those kinds of things, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see once this thing shakes itself out.
So moving on to one of the more exciting things so far this season has been Wemby. I mean, this guy's really – I mean, I think there was a lot of questions when he came in, his size, his whether he was tough enough, strong enough, big enough. The guy's putting up some crazy numbers. And I think these are once-in-a-generation talents that come along. Do you think he's that already?
Well, I think – and I got to be the first to admit, I didn't – of preseason, summer league, things like that. I mean, I just – I didn't see it. Yeah. He looked like he was struggling a little bit, trying to – the speed of the game and all the different things. What position is he? Yeah. I mean, all these kind of questions about him. But, I mean, he's been – I mean, every single game, like we've talked about in the past, right, that – the first step is saying, you know what, I belong here.
Right.
And I think you've seen those lights go off with him already. Like, you know what, I belong here. And now, and you got to give credit to the coaching staff, Popovich. I mean, it's always difficult when you bring a, you know, a guy like that with so much ability, so much hype. Do you just throw him into the fire? Do you bring him along slowly? I mean, they basically said, all right, man, let's get out here and figure it out. And so he's out there shooting threes. He's, you know, taking lobs. He's 7'4". He's got a wingspan of 8 feet, it looks like.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was standing and Kevin Durant, most people, when they see him, they're like, that dude is long. Mm-hmm. And there was a picture of him standing next to Wemby and he looked small.
Right.
I mean, and so that just tells you how long Wemby is. And yet his skill set's, I mean, unbelievable and amazing to be that tall and the movement that he has out there. So, yeah, I mean, I think already you're seeing this kid's probably going to be a generational type talent. Obviously, it's early. He's had a couple really big games, but you can tell already that he's not afraid of the big lights and the bright lights. And so and he's going to be fun to follow, watch his development. And this, you know, Spurs team, I mean, they beat Phoenix twice now. And so, you know, maybe it's not a work in progress. Maybe they're already, you know, a team to look at. And they're very, very young. They got some good young players on that team.
They do. And shout out to former Cavalier Jetty Osman. He's playing well. I made the reference the other day. He reminds me of when Danny Green was released by the Cavs and he went to San Antonio. They plugged him in the system and he was amazing. Got a couple rings out of his entire career because of what he did. And so good for Jetty. Jetty's playing great so far that I've seen.
Yeah, I think everybody that's ever gone to that system, like you said, they, you know, the way they do things, the way they approach the game, you know, you got to give the Spurs organization a lot of credit. They haven't won a championship since Duncan's left.
Right.
And that's the criticism by a lot of people. Well, they can't win it without Duncan or whatever. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how quickly, if Wemby keeps progressing as he is now, all of a sudden you got a major force in the league back in San Antonio again.
Yeah. And Pop may have another Duncan. So that's kind of how I look at it, is he's got to love the opportunity to, as you said, I mean, he did the same with Tim Duncan. Of course, Tim Duncan had David Robinson standing right next to him. And so he didn't have to be, you know, he didn't have to be Tim Duncan. He could just rely on David Robinson for many years, but eventually, you know, he elevated. So I love that with systems. And again, that's where they're at. And that leads me to the next thing. Speaking of systems, tonight college basketball starts. You excited?
Yeah. Well, it snuck up on us, hasn't it?
Right here.
It really has.
Yeah.
Particularly with the NBA season already started. Yeah. You kind of forgot about college and it's been on the back burner. But yeah, they open up and starts up for real.
And with the transfer portal, and you know, college basketball is more my jam. With the transfer portal and the way that teams have loaded up and reloaded up, boy, I marked this podcast that it's going to be a very good season. And I know there's like a top five, and there are a few that are very, very elite. Kansas, Duke, obviously. Duke has, you know, got all their guys back and then reloaded again, as they always do. I just think it's going to be a really, really good college basketball season based on talent, whether you like the transfer portal or not. It's changed the game, just like we're seeing in college football, honestly. How does Georgia Tech look?
Well, they played one exhibition game early on about a week or so ago, and obviously they look good in that. Yeah. Team they played wasn't real good, but they open up, I think, with Georgia Southern coming up here this week, and so it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's totally – talk about transfer portal. I mean, I think they got 7 new guys on the roster, so it's going to take me a while to even learn all their names, you know, for a while, and I think that's going to be the case with a lot of college programs, and even really the first half of the college season, right? It's like, oh, I see Dickinson scores, and oh, he doesn't play for Michigan anymore.
Kansas now.
He's playing for Kansas. So, I mean, it's just like just knowing where the players are is going to be a challenge early on in the season. But like you said, it should make for a fun college basketball season. It's, I think, particularly that, like the transfer portal or not like it, I think it's given some teams a quicker fix than it maybe used to be. Yep. So if you were a bad team, you go get you a couple transfers in the portal, all of a sudden you're a lot better team than you were last year. So it gives teams opportunities to make bigger jumps quicker, maybe. We'll see. But definitely a chance to raise their talent level through the transfer portal.
Do you remember your first game at Georgia Tech?
Oh, I remember it vividly. I mean, I think we played Wofford College, something like that. And, you know, when we got there, the Tech program was really, really bad.
Yeah, bags on the head, right?
And so I think the students were wearing bags over their heads the year before or something like that. I'm not lying. Yeah. That's actually the truth.
Yeah.
And so I didn't even know this at the time, but my dad had come in to watch my first college game. But he literally had to stay up, you know, in the area where you – couldn't see him because there was only about 100 people in the gym, you know, for our first college game. And so he waited till the game started before he came and sat down or whatever. But I think I had 20 points my first college game. Well, we won, and the excitement started building there. Georgia Tech early, and 2 years later, the students were lying down the streets packing that place out. The Thriller Dome is what they called it. You know, we turned it into the Thriller Dome. And so, yeah, that was a great run. But I vividly, yeah, I remember my first college game. And, yeah, it was like off to the races, man.
And now, I mean, you know, it's funny because that was without the transfer portal. You guys just did it organically. Correct. You know what I mean? Not to be old school, but you guys did it organically.
We started 4 freshmen.
Right.
It was a total rebuild. We started a 4 freshmen. Going into the ACC, you know, it was just, it was a gauntlet. And we got our eyes opened and we got our tails whipped a few times, you know, by the big boys in the conference. And as that season went along, I think we won 13 games that year, which for Tech was, I mean, doesn't sound great. We were like 13-18, but that was like we actually are moving forward with the program and turn that around and win 18 games the next year. And then 27 and then 28. So it was like a massive quick turnaround in that program. And it was really, it's a movie in the making, honestly. I mean, you talk about a lot of teams in that, but I don't think what we were able to accomplish had really ever been done in that conference that quickly, you know, because when Tech got into the ACC, I mean, people thought we were going to kind of be the Vanderbilt of the SEC or whatever, like, Tech's not going to be able to compete in the ACC. Mm-hmm. And so by winning that first ACC championship, we showed people that Tech could compete. Tech did belong, and that we were a basketball powerhouse in a powerhouse conference like that. And so it was an incredible story because we were misfits, really. You know, I was a 5'11", 155, you know, shooting point guard, which didn't exist back in those days. John Sally was a 6'9", 180-pound stick coming out of New York City that nobody really wanted him either. And so, you know, we were like a land of misfit toys, and we just, for some reason, Bobby Cremins was able to put it together. We all fit together, and it was just an unbelievable ride going from worst to first in 2 years, you know. And really, if my roommate had hit a 15-foot jumper, you know, my senior year when I made the pass, we would have been back-to-back ACC champions.
Who's your roommate?
You know.
Who was your roommate?
Huh? Craig Neal.
I was going to say, I didn't want to throw Craig under the bus. So, all right.
Yeah, Craig Neal. And
Noodles, right? Was it Noodles?
Noodles.
Is that what they call
Noodles?
Him?
Noodles was my guy, man. They double-teamed me. I kicked it to him. If he makes that shot, we win it back-to-back. But
man, I can't get over the stark comparison of everything you just said. Like, I got chills about the fact that you started at Georgia Tech with four freshmen. Where in your NBA career, you start with four rookies.
Yep.
You go from a laughing stock at Georgia Tech to, you know, duplicating your record the next year. You go to Cleveland, and you said, what did you say? You won 13 games.
Yeah.
And you've said this before. You reversed that number in Cleveland. You won 31. How weird is this? Like, seriously, this is like weird stuff.
Yeah.
So you go to Cleveland, you play twice as many games or more. You win 31 games versus 13, and everybody in Cleveland's excited, just like at Georgia Tech, they were excited. And you're like, this is a disappointment. We should have won more. And then the next year, you made the playoffs in Cleveland and never missed the playoffs in your career with Cleveland. Is that right?
That's right. That's correct. Yeah.
Think about that, Mark. That's crazy. Like, as you were talking, I'm sitting here putting that math together. I don't know if you've ever thought, I'm sure you've thought of that, but Lenny Wilkins.
Well, I haven't thought about it as in depth as you just said, but yeah,
goodness.
It's like, seems like I was always as a player, I was put into kind of a rebuilding situation, but took that on and, you know, ran with it. And
love it.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, to win an ACC, I mean, I don't think, you know, you can understand it. Most people, people don't realize that the ACC.
Best conference in the
country. I mean, it was the best conference by a large margin.
Not even close.
You know, back in those days. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to go in and beat the, you know, I hate to punch this on you, but
Dean Smith,
to beat North Carolina three times in one season
sure.
to win an ACC championship. That was like an impossible feat.
Absolutely. Right.
it was literally like an impossible. I don't think maybe one team. Somebody looked back and I don't know that anybody had ever beat Dean Smith like three times in one season. You know, and that's what we had to do. That's what we had to do to win the ACC championship. And so it was just it was incredible. And the city of Atlanta was on fire. I mean, we were the story of the city. And so those comparisons are really good. Cleveland was the same way.
Same way.
You know, that they were known as the cadavers when we all showed up, you know, and
four misfits.
And
Ron Harper from Miami of Ohio, John's, you know, Hot Rod, Skinny. I mean, literally, like it is. So if they make the movie, they can make a sequel too. they can make two movies out of it. Somebody's going to owe us some rights because seriously, it's two incredible stories and they're the same story. It's almost like Rocky. Like Rocky 1 and Rocky 2. You know? It's incredible, man. It really is incredible to think about it in those terms.
No doubt. And I think, you know, even if you look back at that draft in 86, doesn't get the credit. Like, I mean, tell me, you can always say, well, somebody got Jordan or somebody got Shaq or that one guy, but can you name me a better draft of four guys?
No.
I mean, and you know, I always include Hot Rod in that because he couldn't play.
Right.
They already had him, but to get Brad, Ron, myself in one draft.
Right.
I mean, I'd compare that against any draft ever, really, for a team. And yet, you don't hear a lot of people talk about that, and it turned a franchise around for sure.
And you look at the Clippers, who had. Much like OKC now, the OKC has draft picks for years. I don't even know how many they have anymore. The Clippers were that way every year because they were so bad. And so they just kept reloading every year. And they brought in a lot of really good players. I mean, I could run down that list. You know it as well. So many good players, and they never made the chemistry work, and they had a lot of injury. I mean, they just had like such bad luck for so many years. You guys put that thing together in a bottle and it worked, and it was amazing. And anyway, it's just so weird that that's your college and your NBA career. That's pretty cool. Something we never talked about. So, okay, we got to move forward. Unfortunately, we got to move forward with two sad situations last week. Sadly, two basketball legends, in my opinion, because I'm a Carolina guy, passed. And that, let's start with Walter Davis. Do you have any memories of he was just a great Tar Heel, Suns player, NBA legend. What are your thoughts on Walter Davis passing?
Yeah, really, really sad. I mean, the Greyhound, Walter Davis, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, my dad was an assistant coach with the Phoenix Suns.
Right.
When I was 10 years old, and, you know, Walter Davis played for the Phoenix Suns. And so that was really my remembrance of Walter Davis. I was too young, you know, when he was playing in college to remember much of that. But man, what a graceful, I just remember just the speed that he had, just a beautiful jump shot, just one of the most, what I would call graceful players that I ever saw. Just never looked like he was in a hurry, just smooth and just, you know, they call him the Greyhound. He could really run. He could, you know, was a great athlete, had this beautiful jump shot, and just a kind person, you know, from my interactions with him over the years. And so, yeah, it hit home, you know, one of those, because he's 9 years older, you know, 10 years older than me. And anytime someone, you know, passes away in their, you know, 60s, and, you know, it hits home that, hey, you know, that day's coming.
Right.
That day's coming for all of us. But it's a sad day when you lose somebody, and that was a person that you looked, that was one of your predecessors in the game. And he was very, very, he was not only a great person, but a great basketball player.
And we'll talk about this in the faith segment, but you're right. It does kind of hit home, is that age number is not like somebody. Yep. And now someone, and I hate to move forward, but I do want to talk about the passing of obviously Bobby Knight, an incredible icon. And everybody's got a lot of opinions. I was good. I was really happy to see that most people's response was favorable, just because the guy's been an incredible mind. I text you and said, there's two books I read, The Season on the Brink and Playing for Knight, which Steve Alford's book of basically The Season on the Brink, when I was really starting to get into basketball. And so what are your thoughts on Coach Knight? Did you ever interact with him? Do you have any stories about Coach Knight?
You know, I really never had much interaction with Coach Knight. Our paths never crossed much. Only time was I had been a part of the 1983 Pan American team that we had won the gold medal after my freshman year. And we were kind of, you know, most of those guys on that team, and we had guys like Jordan, you know, Tisdale. I mean, we had an unbelievable team, Chris Mullen, guys like that on that team. And we were basically all kind of told that we would have a really good shot at making the Olympic team in 84. But Knight was the coach for the 84 team. And I just remember, and it was a little bit controversial at the time, probably would be a lot more now with social media and everything else. But, you know, he passed over John Stockton. He passed over me to pick Steve Alford, who was coming out of high school.
Yeah.
You know, because he had signed at Indiana.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, obviously that was, you know, why he made the team.
Right.
It was probably promised that, you know, to come to Indiana or whatever. But so we were all, you know, I didn't have a favorable view of Bobby. Now, matter of fact, I think Bobby Crimmins almost got in a fight with him. I think they got story was he got in the elevator and Bobby was like, why'd you treat my guy that way or something?
Yeah.
And Knight, they went at it or something. But, you know, but, you know, for whatever, you know, like I said, I think the thing that everybody can agree on with Bobby Knight was that he was a brilliant basketball mind. Mm-hmm. His coaching speaks for itself. His winning speaks for itself. The championships speak for themselves. Now his methods, people can certainly disagree on.
Right.
And I think it's probably true. He probably wouldn't be able to coach in today's age.
No.
Not with social media, not with, you know, cameras catching every word. I mean, there's for what we saw on video of him, who knows what went on behind the scenes.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah. So I think everybody's got their opinions on that, but I think the one thing we can all agree on, he was a great basketball mind, right. And he got the most out of his players and talent. And so I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. There's a great clip that I couldn't post because I just didn't want to share the language that's in it because it's Bobby Knight. It's rather colorful, but it's one of my favorite things, that a quote that he said, and he was talking about putting guys on the bench, and he goes through this anatomy of putting your, you know, basically said, you know, putting your butt on the bench, butt speaks to mind, mind speaks to itself and says, start playing better, butt gets off the bench and starts playing, you know, and that's that's the clean version, but it's one of my favorites because at the end of the day, back to your point, he could not coach in today's game because he could not say something like that. But I watched so many teams where it's like, you know what, this kid that was at AAU and he was 5-star and he was on all the websites, put him on the bench. I mean, he'll start playing better. I guess we're old school, Mark. I don't know. Maybe we should rename the podcast. I don't know.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines is, it's an old movie called Kicking and Screaming. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen that. You know, about this guy that coaches these little kids, and his favorite thing he would say was, you know, you need to go grab some bench. Right. You know, just go grab some bench. Like, he even told that to the parents in the movie or whatever. Yeah. You know, go grab some bench.
Yeah.
You know, and I that's just, there's nothing that gets your attention more than a sore backside, right?
That's right. And not from physical contact, from going and sitting and watching your play. Like, guess we're just old school. But there was a lot of that in Playing for Knight, the book by Steve Alford, where he treated Steve Alford horrible. I mean, those two did not get along. And there's a lot of great stories in there from that I remember. But I also remember 1987 when I believe it was 87, 88, when Keith Smart hit the corner jump shot in the exact same corner, in the exact same city, wearing the exact same number that MJ hit it for UNC, which is really one of those just weird basketball things. But I do remember that game, and Steve Alford was on fire from three. It was just amazing. So anyway, you know, rest in peace to both of them. And I just wanted to get you thoughts on that and transition to the faith segment, because one of the things that really that brought back to mind, as we talked about a little bit earlier, is that we're here for just a minute. I mean, we really are. I think we take it for granted sometimes until someone, a friend, a family member, someone close to our age brings it to mind that we are here for just a minute. And so for the faith segment today, you know, there are a couple of verses. Psalm 39:4 says, you know, Lord, remind me how brief my time on earth will be. Remind me that my days are numbered and how fleeting my life is. What are your thoughts on just kind of how brief our life is?
Well, it really is. I think there's different stages of our lives. I mean, when we're 10 years old, you know, we think we're going to live forever, right? I mean, it just, life seems, you know, to be 80 years old. I mean, when you're 10, to think that one day you'll be 80, that just seems like millions of years away. You know, you have this long, long life ahead of you. And then you, obviously, you see tragedies where people die young. And those really grab your attention that, hey, you know what? I'm not promised tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'm not promised tomorrow. I need to make the most. I need to do what I can to get the most out of today. And, you know, what's the way I can honor the Lord the most today? How would, you know, what would Jesus do? You know, that saying, how would he live if he knew he would, you know, you hear that all the time. If you knew you only had 24 hours, mm-hmm. you know, would it change the way you live? Mm-hmm. And I think most of us would probably say yes. Mm-hmm. You know, we would be those things that really mattered. All of a sudden, we would spend the most time focusing on, right? And so I think that's a great lesson for us all, that why don't we do that anyway?
Right.
You know, you know, and why don't we live that anyway? Why don't we live every day to the fullest, you know God and to make him known, mm-hmm. you know, in every way possible. You know, the purpose of every Christian's life is to know him and to make him known. And are we doing that? You know, can I do that better tomorrow than I did today? And so, yeah, for sure. And I love that verse that you talked about. And it gives us, as believers in Christ, to know that this is not our home. Mm-hmm. This is not our final destination. We're just passing through, you know, on our way to spend eternity in heaven with the Father. And so that hope and that peace for us, we can view death and those kind of things differently? Is it less painful? No, because you lose somebody that was dear to you and special to you. And there's that whole, it's been 20 years since I lost my father. Mm-hmm. And there's still that hole there that'll never be replaced, because my dad was just had such an impact on my life. And yet I know I'm going to get to see him again one day. Right. But that doesn't take away the hole that's here while we're here. And so those things we have to deal with here on the earth, those thorns in the flesh, so to speak, that Paul talks about in a lot of different ways, things that there's some things that are just never going to be fixed here on this earth, right? But yet God gives us the Holy Spirit and the peace to deal with those circumstances and to keep our eyes focused on Him. In a lot of ways, He allows these things in our lives so that we will keep our focus on Him.
Yeah.
And to know that He knows the number of our days. And that was something I know for me, and we go through difficult times. And I just remember that even, a couple of years ago when we were going through all that COVID stuff, right? And people were dying and people were getting sick, and there was so much fear out there, right? I mean, there was so much fear in the world of catching this thing that it could kill you or whatever, which we now know it wasn't, that's a different discussion, right. But there was that fear that was real in people's minds. Sure. And yet I just, that verse just kept coming back to me through that all the time. And I just was never worried about it. I was just never fearful, because I know that God knows the numbers of my days. And if that's what it's going to take, well, He knew that. That was my time. And if it's not my time, it's not my time.
Right.
Because he knows when my time is. And that just gives me that peace to know that I don't have to live in fear.
Right.
No matter what may come, I'm like, if God, I remember, Paul, the Apostle Paul says, for me to live is Christ. And to die is gain.
To gain. Right. Right.
And that's like powerful, powerful verse. Like, if He chooses to leave me here, man, I'm going to live for Christ.
Right.
But if He decides to take me, that's even better, right? I'm going to get to be with Him. And so I think, as believers, that should be our mindset as we walk every day. Not to, particularly, there's so much stuff and craziness in the world right now. I think Satan uses fear more than anything else. And we as believers, we don't need to fear. We don't. We know what He's done. We know where we're going. And it's just a matter of His timing.
Right.
And we don't know what that is. So let's not spend our time worried about that. Let's live life to the fullest. Let's live, for me to live, as Paul says, Christ, to know Him, to make Him known, and to die one day is gain. And to look at it in those terms, for me, is just very comforting in my life.
I agree. And I agree that, you mentioned your dad, I've mentioned my mom. They both had a huge role in both of our lives. For me, it was my mom, just a huge impact. And in her passing, and you've seen this with your dad too, in their passing, you see the ripple of the life that they lived, the lives they impacted for Christ, their witness. And honestly, for me, Mark, when I look at it and I think back on her life, I lost two of my best friends in college in a car accident instantly. And I see that as well. And so when I see those, and I don't mean to be morbid in this conversation, when we see that, we have a choice. When we see how did they impact people, we have a choice to make at that point. And regardless of what our life was in the past, what our life will be moving forward from their passing is up to us. We can choose to really dive in and lean into the opportunity that we have to leave the impact that they left on us, because it is brief. I don't know. None of us know our days, but we do know how we can treat people and how we can honor people and how we can just introduce people to Jesus. I can't save anybody, but He can. And so I think that's the other thing. The pressure's off. It's not my job to save anyone. My job is to introduce you to the guy that can. And so, I mean, exactly. I don't know. Right. I guess we have a choice in death. And Anyway, again, not to be morbid in the episode, I just think it's an important topic that we should all really consider. Again, the world's crazy right now. So, you know, take a minute and just think about that and think about your impact and what kind of impact are you leaving?
Yeah, and that's, you're exactly right. And, you know, my encouragement for anyone out there that's listening to this podcast that might be living in fear in some kind of way or afraid of death or might have lost someone and has a lot of pain, you know, just to encourage you to trust that God really does have a plan, mm-hmm. and he knows the number of your days, and take advantage of them. Right. Don't waste. You don't know when your number is going to be called, so to speak, you know? And so live it to the fullest, honor him, you know, impact other people. And like you said, introduce them to the one who can change their life forever, Jesus Christ, and let him do the rest.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it's almost, and this is going to be a bad analogy, but in a basketball game, you don't win or lose a game on a last shot. You win or lose a game by the decisions you make throughout the game. You know what I mean? And again, you have a choice. And when you're in, you know, when you're at the gas station and somebody says something to you, maybe, you know, we have a choice at that moment to honor and just give love and be Christ and live the Jesus way, or be hateful and mean. And you know what I mean? And those little things add up to the win in your life. And again, that may be a very bad analogy, but I found that in my own, is I have a choice. I'm faced with choices all the time. There's actually a scripture that talks about that. And I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but we have choices, and, you know, you have a choice every moment, every interaction, every life you touch, whether it's at the car wash, work every day, wherever it may be, you have choices, and choose to be Christ. Choose to leave a massive imprint. And you did that in your career, and you've done it as I've seen your life. You've done that throughout your life as well. And I just appreciate that, because I know it's had a massive impact everywhere you've played, including Georgia Tech and Cleveland. So.
Well, I appreciate that, Aaron, and same to you. And it's, you know, it's just a privilege. Yeah. You know, I'm honored, that people would want to listen to our podcast. Right. I'm honored, you know, that people want to listen to what I have to say. And with that comes a lot of responsibility. Absolutely. And I understand that. And I'm not in no way, I'm not a perfect person. And there's probably been people out there that've caught me on a bad day, and maybe I haven't, you know, been as nice as I could be, but I do as much as I can to try to honor the Lord with every person that I run into, with every conversation. And, you know, so many times it just doesn't cost you anything to be kind.
Right.
And so, you know, that was just something I saw my father in particular that manifested me. It didn't matter if you were the CEO of the company or if you were, you know, the janitor at the arena, you know, he would stop and treat everybody the same. I don't know of any greater example that I could have had that impacted me more in my life than that.
I love it. Again, morbid conversation, but a good conversation, a healthy one to have, I think, even in your own mind, you know, before you go to bed at night. How'd I do today? You know, check in with yourself. Yeah. And in the morning, pray that you are that way the next, you know, throughout the day, because we never know what even the day is going to throw us. So anyway, great stuff. All right. Cavs this week, Thunder, they got a rematch with the Warriors and the Kings. So they're going on the road, and that Kings game is no longer a dub. That's a guaranteed dub. Kings are back, and they're very dangerous. They're almost the new Warriors, I feel like, in the West. Mike Brown's doing some good things with that team. They're playing fast, and they're dangerous. So Cavs it doesn't get any easier. That's for sure.
No, it doesn't. I really see the NBA as a whole has really improved this year overall, top to bottom. Yeah. I thought the last couple years, it's been pretty top heavy in some ways, but I think the lower echelon, if that's the right word for it, the lower echelon teams have all gotten better,
right.
have added talent. I mean, you even see teams like a Houston, who's been pretty bad the last few years. And even though they're not going to win a championship this year, but they're very competitive. They're, you know, and all these different teams, the Thunder's on the rise,
right.
You know, Obviously, San Antonio is not going to be a gimme this year with all the new pieces they have. So I think it's going to be exciting all around. And yeah, to every single game, there's very few games the Cavs are going to go into and say, hey, this is a gimme.
That's right.
You know, they're going to have to go take it and win it. And that's a good thing. They're talented enough to do that. And hopefully they'll continue to, now that they got all their pieces back, will continue to get in the groove. And like I said, it'd be nice to see at some point run off 5-6 games in a row, you know, kind of get them and separate some separation from some other teams.
And I think they'll do that. And it's good to have them healthy. So prayers for continued health for the Cavaliers and the road trip ahead. Good to have you on again, Mark. And this has been episode 55. It's great to talk to you again.
Always fun, Aaron. And I look forward to talking to you again next week.
Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Mark Price for Three podcast. Remember to subscribe, like, review, and share. I'm Josh Price, and we will talk to you again on the next episode.
You don't have to go very far looking for bad news because somehow it just finds you. So finding peace in the chaos can be really difficult, but it doesn't have to be because the River mobile app exists. The River is a Christian music radio station dedicated to playing music to help you get through life's toughest moments or life's happiest moments and everywhere in between. And all from artists who love Jesus and are real people just like you. Listening is easy. You can download it wherever you get apps from. Just search 1049 The River or listen online at riverradio.com.